This is the Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
It seems like the Heat this year, with the way that they're built, they have a lot to prove, and I think that they could potentially be the 2 seed in the East.
Kevin Rayfuse.
It's October 28th. The Spurs play the Thunder. And so you got Lamar Saldridge making his debut with San Antonio. You've got Kevin Durant, first game back, coming off foot surgery. You know, we know these teams have battled before, twice in the Western Conference Finals.
Justin Cousart.
You got to get somebody around Davis. Maybe some guards that can get on the ball, so not Lance Stevens.
Let's go.
So just a bit of background for how these episodes kind of come together. We record nearly every single one on a Saturday. Now, obviously, there's exceptions with some of the midweeks, and, you know, every once in a while there'll be something different, but we record on Saturday. So I understand that we're not necessarily going to be looking
at our
best
to impress.
Sometimes.
Yeah, we're not dressed to impress.
And full disclosure, I'm in a t-shirt and basketball shorts right now, so I'm not really trying to impress anyone.
Right.
However, Tim Tompkins
Jesus, dude.
walked in here today, and I'm telling you, is wearing the worst outfit of all time,
like
bar none.
Like, I don't think you could get any worse. The only thing is maybe if you were wearing a wife beater would make it worse.
I would never wear a wife beater.
I actually wear them under my shirts
under,
a lot.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, dude, your outfit, like, did you deliberately?
I was so proud of myself when I picked out this outfit this morning. I'm not kidding. I was so proud of myself.
I think you're proud of yourself because you know how ironic you're being about how bad this outfit is.
I feel like this.
But it's so bad, it's good.
No, that doesn't work.
No, there's no way. Okay, first off, and our listeners don't know, so let's let the, Kevin, let's try to describe this for our listeners for a second. So he's got this, I'm going to say, teal shirt.
It is teal,
it
I think.
Is a
I'm
teal
colorblind,
shirt,
so I'm not 100% sure.
Teal t-shirt, which is fine.
The shirt's honestly not bad. The shirt's probably the only redeeming
but
thing about all this.
But then he's got different colored red plaidish pants. They're like checkered
and burnt orange and maroon.
No, it's like a quilt. They look like
a quilt.
No, that's a good description.
It's like a quilt that's different shades of red and yellow.
Needless to say, it doesn't match with teal.
No, and then the kicker is the Crocs with the socks.
Don't forget about my translucent glasses.
Oh, I wasn't going to. Justin's letting you off easy. We've already roasted you wearing Crocs and socks before.
See, I forgot you were wearing glasses.
The
I can't see you.
Tim's translucent glasses look like if you ever had science class back in like middle school or elementary school, something like that, when you were learning how to use a microscope and just doing basic science experiments. And they just look like those awful safety goggles that you used to use if you had anything remotely
dangerous.
How much
did they cost you, if you don't mind me asking?
Too much. Anything, any amount of money that you paid
free,
for those
too
is too much.
I like these glasses.
No, they are big. They're nice.
Yep. They are big. They're very Riverside.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, this, I feel like this outfit proves 100% that you are a hipster.
Absolutely, I'm not. But the great thing about being in your early 30s, and a lot of people listening don't know what Riverside is, but it's the it's a hipster part of town.
Yeah.
But being in your early 30s, having a girlfriend, and living in the hipster part of town means you can dress however you want all of the time.
You are clearly living that life right now. And just to preface this, because I know this is obviously an audio thing, you can't actually see Tim.
Yeah.
But
we're gonna get a picture
when we have cover. Pictures of these episodes, and we're gonna tweet this at Drive and Dish NBA. You guys just have to see how awful this outfit is. So stay tuned for that.
Pure awesomeness, actually. Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, this is the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Cousart.
How come when Pizza Rat stumbles down the stairs with food, it's virtual video? But when I do it, I'm drunk and I'm told I have to go home.
Why are you stumbling? Are you going to live in the sewers when you're stumbling with pizza after you've been drinking?
No, it's just stumbling down the stairs, man. Just stumbling.
Just in case you guys don't know, Justin is a hilarious follow on Twitter, and he posts original jokes, which people don't do that often.
No.
And some of them are spot on, and some of them are not.
Some of them are complete misses. I don't know which ones are spot on and complete misses, because nobody favors any of them. So.
But regardless, Justin is so proud of his jokes, and he should be.
I guess so.
Justin is shameless on Twitter. It's as shameless as Tim's outfit right now. It really is.
So as we do with every week, we're going to read an iTunes review and just let you guys know that we really do appreciate them. They aren't just to stroke our egos. They really do help us climb up the iTunes ranks. And so what we want you to do right now, it is as easy as sending a text message. You have your iPhone up. You're listening to this podcast. Click the search button. Search for the podcast again. Trust me on this one. Then once it comes up, there's going to be a little review button. Just type in a little review. We'll read it. We'll read it on the show, and we really do appreciate it.
Yeah, this week we have one from Sweden. It's our first one from Sweden. It's a 5-star review. The title of it is Thumbs Up. It's by Ellison Snig. Ellison says, fair input, great discussions about the week of basketball. Recommended.
Very vanilla, but... Huh? We always appreciate.
It's our first one in Sweden. We're not going to get any more Swedish reviews now. I'm just killing them.
Thank you. I was trying to think of a joke about Swedish people, but nothing came to mind. So
yeah, no, that was a very... who was it from?
It was from Ellison Snig. Oh, I hope I said that right.
Ellison?
Ellison.
Do you think that Ellison is a popular name in Sweden?
I don't know. I've never been to Sweden.
We should go.
I'm down.
Well, enough about that, but we wanted to let you guys know that we do this pretty cool thing called Periscope. Kevin would disagree, but it's fine. We do this pretty cool thing called Periscope during our episode recording on Saturdays, where we give you a little live behind-the-scenes view. It's live streaming. It's pretty cool. If you ever want to see the link or find out what it is, just check in with us on Twitter. And we'll post a link up on Saturdays around like 11-ish usually. So
Eastern Standard Time, yeah.
Why don't we get some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in the news, Wesley Matthews could be out until Christmas because of his injury. Apparently, Paul Pierce does not let his teammates wear LeBron James's shoes. Dirk said he plans to play about 2 more seasons. There's been reports that Denver is likely to sign Mike Miller. LeBron was talking about Tristan Thompson's contract negotiations, and he said, I'm not involved. The Nuggets have said that Emmanuel Mudiay will be their starter in the beginning of the season. Markieff Morris said, I want to be with the Suns, which is surprising because that's not what he said in the past. And last thing in your news, Parsons had minor hybrid microfracture knee surgery, but he should be back before the season starts. And that's your news for this week.
So Adam Silver, being Adam Silver, is continuing to make changes. And one change that he decided to make, along with other people, obviously, is that they are going to change the format of the NBA Finals to give teams more rest in between games, namely the traveling team.
Oh, yeah, we really need to stretch out the finals any longer than the NBA playoffs are already stretched out. Well, no, I'm all right with this. I mean, I get it. But it's just kind of like 3 days between every game now, really?
It's not between every game. It's every other game.
Here's the explanation of it. So for the 2016 NBA Finals, Game 1 is going to be on Thursday, June 2nd. Game 2 is going to be on Sunday, June 5th, 3 days. Game 3 is going to be on Wednesday, June 8th. Game 4, Friday, June 10th. Game 5, Monday, June 13th. Game 6, if needed, Thursday, June 16th, Game 7, Sunday, June 19th.
Okay, so all but 1 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, it just stretches out. I'm glad that there's going to be games on a Friday now, that's just selfish for us because we all work morning shift.
But last year when it was during the finals, I was blown. My mind was blown that a game wasn't on a Friday.
Well, so my question is, and Kevin, I know Tim probably won't care about this as much as you and me maybe would, but hockey's on around that time. The playoffs in hockey is happening. So my question, in last year, they had it really set good where it was one day it was hockey, the next day it was basketball, and they never overlapped each other. Now I'm curious to see with this new schedule if maybe somehow they're going to overlap
they'll be able to avoid each other. They almost always work that out, and if anything, you know, now hockey has 2 different days to choose from, and they don't directly overlap. I mean, there's playoffs going on. NBA playoffs usually go later than hockey playoffs, put it that way. Hockey playoffs are usually over by, I think it's like the first week of June, hockey playoffs are over, and basketball is much later.
So maybe the first 3 games of finals for the NBA.
I'm not too worried about that. I mean, that'll be fine. And if I have to watch both, I have to watch both. I'll have two screens going.
Yeah, oh darn.
It's not ideal, but oh well.
Yeah. No, I agree. So we'll see. We'll see how this works out, I guess, trying to keep the teams healthy.
Well, when I first saw this, my initial reaction was, it seems like this really favors
the older players.
Older players and also teams that are really starter heavy. So the Clippers, the Cavs, the Spurs to a certain extent, just because of their age, maybe not so much this year going into it. Oh, you know, then again, they do have Tony Parker. But it seems like this kind of favors those types of teams and doesn't favor teams like the Warriors.
Well, it seems like you can't get any momentum going. I mean, you know, sooner you win a game and you're riding the high of that game, you got to wait 3 days now.
But on the same side is they're going to come into each game fresh. Everyone's going to be fresh. So the winner, in theory, would be the team that is better. Like, there's no chance for just a team to have an off night, which, there's always a chance for that. But I mean,
it won't be because their legs are tired.
Yeah, it won't be because they're tired. So, I mean, I see it working out for both teams. I agree that maybe it makes the finals a little bit longer. They don't have to be, but you know, we'll see if the experiment works.
Yeah, and I assume that if it doesn't, they will go back and revert to their old ways because it looks like Adam Silver doesn't mind changing things.
Agreed.
So we are joined now by a special guest here on the podcast, the one and only Zach Harper. You know him at Talk Hoops on Twitter. He's an NBA writer for CBS Sports, WolfAmongWolves.com, also the Eye on Basketball podcast. Zach, appreciate you joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the Minnesota Timberwolves, what a wild few years it's been. You go from Kevin Love wants out. It seems like, you know, when a superstar leaves his team that you never get fair value back. Instead, LeBron goes back to Cleveland, just setting off this whole chain of events. And now the Minnesota Timberwolves go from a disgruntled Kevin Love to having Andrew Wiggins get the number one overall pick, getting Karl Anthony Towns in the fold. And it seems like there's just a lot of good feelings around this team right now. So going into training camp as we approach the preseason, you know, what's the atmosphere like in Minnesota right now?
I mean, I think it's hopeful. I think people should also recognize that this team's still bad. They're still a very bad team. It looks like they're headed in the right direction. They're going to be good in the future. But this was a, 16-win team last year, and they weren't as bad as the record. That came with a lot of injuries, so many injuries that at one point they signed Sean Kilpatrick to a 10-day contract, literally because he was in town. That's why he got the deal. It's not because they were that high on him. I mean, he was good, and he's a good shooter, but they had so many injuries. They were just looking for guys in proximity who were qualified to play. So maybe they were a 25-win team. They've bolstered the roster over the last year. Maybe that puts them up to 30, 35 wins. That's still not a good team, but you have your cornerstones. You have Andrew Wiggins, who is just going to be an incredible superstar, already looked like a star in his first year. You have Karl Anthony Towns, who I think you at least expect to be a solid player. Maybe he's not an incredible superstar in the NBA, but even if he's like Al Horford, Al Horford's one of the best big men. So if you get that out of him, that would be an incredible win. You've got a lot of good talent in Zach LaVine or Shabazz Muhammad or Gorgie Jang. Maybe Adrian Payne can be something. Maybe Tyus Jones can be something. They just have a lot of things that look like they're going in the right direction. You said it, like, it could have been an absolute mess when you lose your superstar, and they may have gotten the best return any team's ever gotten when they're kind of faced with that situation.
When you mentioned the first cornerstone of it and the big haul from the Kevin Love trade, and that's Andrew Wiggins, coming off his Rookie of the Year season, a lot to be encouraged about. And we can already see how good of an athlete he is, which we kind of knew going into the draft. And we saw that last year where he often uses just his athleticism to make plays. But it seemed like he shied away from the three-point line, and it seemed like he didn't attack the rim as much as he could. He kind of settled for that mid-range jumper, only shooting 31% behind the arc next year. You know, what's the next step in Andrew Wiggins' game, and what will it take for him to reach the potential that we all think he can?
I think it's similar to what you saw with Paul George a couple of years ago, where he just has to be comfortable handling the basketball. He's not a very strong dribbler. He does get a lot off athleticism, but he doesn't have a strong handle on the ball when he's moving to spots to get his open shots. Now, he did get a little more aggressive as the year went on, and he ended up, I think, over the last month or 2 months, he was averaging like 10 free throw attempts per game. But yeah, he completely shied away from the 3-point shot. I think maybe he took one a game, if that, and he was only shooting like 16% after the All-Star break. But it looked like something early in the season that could do well for him. He also played a ton of minutes. I mean, he was one of the top minutes guys in the league, not just for rookies, but for anybody. And they asked him to play way too many minutes down the stretch. I think part of that's fatigue. Part of that's flips offense of, you know, not big on three-pointers, wants to get the ball in the middle of the floor, and so Wiggins did that. But if he can learn how to just be comfortable getting into shots with the dribble, then really there's no limitation to what he can do. I think his shooting stroke's good. He's a solid free throw shooter. He's great around the basket. If he can get to the spots he wants to get to without a lot of hindrance from the defense because his handle's so good, you know, I think that ends up making Paul George kind of his floor of what he can be, and that's a hell of a player.
Well, so then my question to you, if you were in control of this team, if you were the coach, who would be your starting five for this season? Because I feel like they have a lot of players that deserve a good amount of minutes that may, you know, potentially not see as many as they might like.
Yeah, it's a little bit crowded, and, you know, I think some of that will get taken care of just by, you know, the likelihood of injury. Nikola Pekovic doesn't play a full season. Kevin Garnett doesn't play full seasons anymore. So once, I think you can assume those two will at least be banged up enough or go down at some point with some kind of injury to where that opens up the logjam in the front court a little bit. I think the starting lineup I'd like to see is Rubio at point guard. The wings are Wiggins and Kevin Martin, and then Kevin Garnett and Karl Anthony Towns as the big men. I think you need a mixture of the youth and veterans to teach them how to play. I know a lot of people just say, put the five young guys out there and let them get experience. I'm a big proponent of competition to earn minutes. If Shabazz Muhammad and Zach LaVine can't prove that they're better than or more deserving of minutes than, you know, Andre Miller and Kevin Martin and Tayshaun Prince this year, then they probably shouldn't be playing in the first place. They need to get better. And so I think creating competition for minutes is a good thing that Flip likes to do, and I think it's something that will help develop the talent.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Zach, and I think that Flip Saunders shares your opinion as far as players earning minutes, and we know that he likes players to earn those regardless of their draft position. And do you expect Towns to just come in and get that starting role, or is he going to have to prove it day one of the season? Is Towns going to be starting over Peck, or should we expect to see Peck in that starting role?
I think actually the more likely scenario is that Gorgie starts over Karl Anthony Towns. I think that would be the guy who maybe gets that starting nod over him. They talked about last year wanting to bring Peck off the bench and have him be kind of that, you know, maybe big man role player that come in and just bang heads around for 18 minutes and get a bunch of points and grab some rebounds. They know that they have to limit his minutes in the first place because he's just a 290-pound pit bull that just can't move all that well. And so you want to kind of take away the wear and tear on him. But I think Towns will have to earn it. I think he will earn it. I mean, Flip said this about Wiggins going into last season. If he's not guaranteed a starting spot, he's got to earn it. Wiggins was good enough to earn it right away, and he did that. I think Towns will be the same way.
So do you think that we can expect to see Towns and Jang sharing floor time?
Yeah, I think so, because I think they're gonna swing Towns between the four and the five. They actually put Gorgie at the four quite a bit last season when they could. They tried out Pekovic and Gorgie together, and it wasn't a great combination, but they were willing to play around with it. But I think you'll see Towns kind of playing all over the place just based on the matchup and based on what they feel they can get away with.
So the other guy that we mentioned a little bit is Zach LaVine, and we know going into the league, and then obviously was on full display at the dunk contest, just of how freakish of an athlete this guy is. And it seemed like he started to get a little more consistent of a jumper towards the second half of the season. But what is his ceiling, I guess? And is there a way that he possibly can get better on defense? Because that seems to be where he's lacking at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think just consistently reminding him to get ahead a defensive position is a huge start, because he is athletic and he's long and he's quick, and I think he has the right makeup to be a solid defender. I think you just have to teach him how to play defense, and that's something that maybe he didn't get enough time at UCLA, maybe he didn't get enough time in high school. You know, some of those Seattle guys don't exactly play defense in the first place, but I think that with him, you know, it's just a matter of getting reps in and learning the team. And that team was a disaster on defense anyway last year. They were the worst in the league. I think a lot of that was injuries, but, you know, it's just as a unit, they need to get better, and he's a big part of that. And I think that if he can stay on the floor because he's not a liability defensively, then you'll start seeing that consistent jumper come through. You'll start seeing him attacking the basket like he did in the second half of the season. I don't want to completely buy into the second half of the season, because I think we've seen guys like the one that comes to mind is, I think, Terrence Williams of the Nets in like 2011, maybe 2010, was like averaging a triple double the last month of the season. People were like, wow, this guy may be one of the better young players in the league, and then we never heard from him again. So I don't think that'll happen with Zach LaVine, but sometimes those end of season, you know, looter in a riot type scenarios can be misleading.
Well, and you brought it up that their defense was a very, very probably one of their most weak points on their team. Have they done anything else other than, you know, pick up different players and stuff like that? Like, how have they approached trying to get better on the defensive side?
Well, I think being healthy will be a huge key to that, because in the starting lineup, you know, that I'm hoping for with Rubio, Martin, Wiggins, Towns, and KG, you have four defenders on the floor there. Look, Rubio is one of the better defensive point guards in the league when he's healthy. Kevin Martin's a saloon door on defense, so he's not going to give any resistance, but Wiggins is a really good defender. You know, KG can still play really good team defense. I think Towns will probably have foul troubles early on because most young big men do, but once he gets the hang of it, I think he'll be a solid defender. But this team was awful at defending the rim last year. Even Gorgui Dieng, who was supposed to be their rim protector, I think he allowed like 55-56% at the rim because he just couldn't cover all that ground in time. So I think just having a more solid unit on the perimeter will cut down on driving into the lane and getting in the middle of the floor, and then they can recover a little bit easier and not be so spread out. So health is probably the biggest way to at least get them away from the 30 spot, maybe more towards 21-20 in the league.
So you've talked a lot about health, Zach, and it seems like I've been following the Timberwolves. They are my favorite team. I'm a Suns fan myself, but the Timberwolves are a close second for me. And it just seems like every year it's just injury after injury. Some of those injuries I have always felt like, Pat sprained his ankle, let's sit him out for 2 months. I'm not really sure quite how bad the injuries really are. But regardless, is there optimism within the Wolves organization and even the fans for that point going into this year that this year might be a little bit different? It's my understanding they're now working with the Mayo Clinic, so maybe that might help.
Yeah, in the past, they didn't have the greatest facilities. They're kind of in the basement of the Target Center, and they've put a ton of money into a new workout facility, a new training facility that has, you know, state-of-the-art medical equipment. And they've really, since Flip Saunders has come back to the organization, he's made a big push towards getting them at least in the right position medically. You're still going to have freak injuries here and there, but I think they want to be more proactive like the Suns have been. I mean, the Suns are the best in the league at keeping guys healthy and kind of preventing injuries. And I think they want to move towards that. They hired Arne Kander, who was with the Pistons for 23 years, who's just regarded as one of the best physical therapists around in the NBA. And so they've brought in a couple of guys over the years. They brought in Arne Kander this summer. I think they're at least going to be in a position to keep guys healthy. They just have to, you know, avoid those sprained ankles and torn ligaments and see if that can work.
And a guy who's been injured who didn't have a great rookie season, but got off to a much stronger start last year, but then got hurt again, as Shabazz Muhammad. And now as we enter his third year, what realistically is he at this point, and how do you think he factors into the Wolves going forward?
I mean, he's just a scorer. I mean, he's one of those guys that just puts up points efficiently, and, you know, maybe it's just because he's on a bad team, but it's usually pretty early in games, and when they're fairly competitive, and they're fairly competitive with him on the floor, he's still not a great defender. He's not great off the dribble, but he doesn't try to do too much with the ball. He shoots when he's open. He attacks the glass. He attacks in transition. I think that, you know, I think if they were going to be a good team next year, like, let's say they were fighting for a playoff spot and 45 to 50 wins, if they were that good, I think he'd be the type of player who's a sixth man of the year candidate, because he's just an incredible scorer off the bench who can put up easy points in a flurry. And so I think that you want him to, kind of like Zach LaVine, you want him to get better with the ball. You want him to be more consistent with his jumper. You want to see him be in a defensive position more often. But he's a guy that can, you know, really put some points on the board. And I think that's what they're hoping to build towards, is one, keep him healthy so that he can do it for an entire season, but two, keep that momentum going.
Well, and you just brought it up right there. You said if they're fighting for a playoff spot. For a fan's perspective, what is a realistic expectation for this team? Like, should they be seeing them? Obviously, they'll want them to get some more wins, but, you know, where realistically can fans be happy with them ending next year?
Yeah, I think if they're around 30 wins, and it's not just the win total, I think the best example of maybe who you want to be is the Utah Jazz of last year, where Utah had started off, they were competitive, they struggled a little bit, they got competitive again, and then down the stretch in the second half of the season, they were the team nobody wanted to play. They ended up being the best defensive team in the league down the stretch. They had a very good record after the All-Star break, but they were a team that, a young team who kind of figured out what their calling was and nobody wanted to play. Like, they were ruined playoff position for teams that were already getting set and kind of jockeying for position in the seeds in the West. I think that's what the Timberwolves' goal should be. Be the team that nobody wants to play the second half of the season. If that means 30 wins, 35 wins, I'm not quite sure, but I think that you just want to be organized in that sense and kind of find your momentum going into the next season. And I'm not sure if that's actually a real thing. I've asked players about it before. Can you actually build more momentum towards the next season? Some guys say yes, some guys say no, but I think you have to just – you got to learn how to win, and I think they, as long as they learn how to win at some point in the season, you can be pretty happy with that.
So, Zach, taking away from the Wolves for a second, do you think the Jazz make the playoffs?
I don't know. It's hard because you don't know how good the Mavericks are going to be. I mean, every time I think the Mavericks are falling out of the playoffs, they manage to stick around and they end up the sixth seed or something like that. I think we can probably all agree that Portland's probably out. I think the Thunder are back in, unless Kevin Durant goes down again. I think the Pelicans stick around. So can the Jazz be better than the Mavericks? I think so. I think I'd put my money on the Jazz making it over them just because I like their identity more. But if Parsons is healthy right away, if Wes Matthews is healthy right away, if Dirk's healthy for the whole season, it's going to be a coin flip between the two of them.
Well, you didn't mention the Suns, but I won't give you a hard time about that.
I just figured Marquise's going to burn down the arena at some point, so I just don't know if they're going to place to play.
Do you think the Suns made the right decision by not honoring Keefe's trade request?
Yeah, they're in no position. I mean, if he was going to be a free agent next summer, then I think you may be kicking around. We've seen guys before where it's not the best situation in the summer. They come into training camp, they get back with their teammates, they start playing well, the team comes out well. I mean, that team's got a ton of talent. I think that they'll come out there and be competitive from the get-go as long as they don't implode internally. And I think that just once you get back around teammates and get back in the swing of the season and preparing for the season, I think that stuff kind of goes away. Like, yeah, he still wants to play with his brother and he still probably feels like he got screwed in his contract negotiations. That's something that, you know, you learn for next time and you don't settle for a package deal or whatever, because they can trade your brother at any point. It's also a weird thing that, like, you're upset that you don't get to play basketball with your brother professionally. Like, that's just not something that's been a regular demand in NBA history, so it's kind of hard to judge that whole situation. But they've got Brandon Knight, they've got Eric Bledsoe, Tyson Chandler. I mean, they've got a ton of talent on that team. I think that you have to let it breathe a little bit and gel, and I think that by not trading him, unless you just had an offer that was going to blow you away to get Marquise sent out of town, I think you got to make him grow up and say, no, you agreed to this deal, you're going to play through this deal.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I doubt they had that offer that really blew their mind. But taking it back a little bit to the Timberwolves, and I think we'd be remiss to not mention that with Flip Saunders, and he's undergoing cancer treatment right now. And I guess my question to you is there a mood around the team to really come together behind what Flip Saunders is dealing with?
I mean, I think everyone feels that. I think once training camp starts on Tuesday, I think you'll really feel that because it will be weird that he's not around. Sam Mitchell's going to take over the coaching duties. Milton Newton is going to take over the GM duties for now, and both guys are capable of filling in there. And I think that they brought in Brian Gates, who's a fantastic assistant coach. Ryan Saunders, Flip's son, has been really good with developing skill players in the NBA in his short career. I think they have the coaching staff to kind of withstand that drop-off of not having Flip around. And I think that they all know that there's something kind of bigger to play for in that respect, and to come out and be competitive and kind of show him, yeah, what you've been building matters, and we appreciate that opportunity and we want to win for you. Maybe they're not good enough to, but I think they'll come out there with that mentality.
Well, so the intern coach, Sam Mitchell, does he run a similar style of basketball to Flip Saunders? Or, like, what is he going to run when he's out there? Is he going to try to keep everything the same so there's no learning curve?
Yeah, he's going to keep everything the same. I mean, he's kind of in an awkward position because, you know, he is auditioning for another coaching job by doing this, but he doesn't quite get to run his own stuff. He took a lot of stuff from when he played for Flip for the Timberwolves back in the 90s and early 2000s. He took a lot of that stuff and implemented it into his own kind of attack and game plan. Some tweaks here and there, maybe a little bit better pace than what Flip does in the past, maybe better not turning over the ball in certain respects depending on the talent. But I think for the most part, the same components are there for what the two like to run, and he's going to run whatever Flip has been trying to install with that team, because, you know, as much as he probably wants to freelance a little bit more and show what he can do as a coach, showing that you can follow that direction of the organization also is good for coaching auditions.
So it's one of the sadder sagas in the NBA, and that's Anthony Bennett. He got bought out by the Wolves this week. He's now cleared waivers. There are some reports saying that he's going to go back to Canada, going to Toronto. Why did the Wolves want to move on from Bennett? Was it just a logjam like it kind of seems? And realistically, how successful do you think, after two failures now, it seems he can be in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, history is not kind to guys who kind of bounce around teams early on and you know, aren't able to find their way into even their, you know, fourth year option on a rookie deal. Guys like that don't typically last too long, or at least have real successful careers. But I think with him, I don't know, like, you don't want to make excuses for the guy because he still has to play better, but he was injured going into his rookie season. He struggled with injuries last year, and he actually came into camp last year in incredible shape. And then when the injuries hit, he wasn't able to keep his conditioning up, and then he struggled, and he didn't have the green light to take outside jumpers, and he, you know, kind of looked lost both in the system on offense and defense. And so he has a lot to learn, but I think the skills are there. I don't know that he's actually a shooter in a stretch four in the NBA like we want him to be, and I think because of that, and because you look at Adrian Payne on the roster and Nemanja Bjelica, who's coming over as a EuroLeague MVP, those guys were just better options for them. And then you kick in the, you know, the $5.8 million this year and the $7 million next year. It's not as bad with the rising cap, but it's still money that, you know, if you don't have to pay it, you don't want to for a guy who's maybe a fringe player. I think the key for him is just moving on, finding a situation that's going to allow him to learn how to play basketball and stay in shape. And maybe that's Toronto, and if he's more comfortable being at home, you know, more power to him. I think everybody wants to see him do well in the NBA, because the more NBA players that who can really play and contribute, the better for the league. But he's got to find health, and he's got to find conditioning and let his athleticism kind of take over, because there are moments where he's running down the middle of the lane on a fast break and he comes through with this gigantic two-handed dunk and everyone's like, whoa, where'd that come from? It's like, that's how he plays when he's a healthy player, is that he can get up there and dunk on people. I think you just want to see that confidence build.
So you don't think that the Wolves bought into his revival tour this summer?
I mean, not for $5.8 million. For $3.6 million and let him go find that revival somewhere else, I think they were willing to do it. But you look at it, like, they already have five guys who probably should play over him. And that's not even counting, like, if they want to use Tayshaun Prince at the four. They didn't have room for him. And so it's better for him to let him go find a place that will allow him to play. And they saved, I think, $2.2 million in the process. So I think it just worked out for everybody.
So Ricky Rubio, we haven't talked about him yet. You know, I've always really enjoyed Ricky Rubio, and I like watching him play. And I think that he's not quite appreciated enough for his ability to really run an offense. And as you mentioned earlier in the interview, he's amazing defensively. The problem with Rubio is, and everyone knows, he can't score. He can't shoot. He can't score around the basket. And that there's been a bunch of trade rumors circulating Rubio this offseason. And what do you make of those?
I can tell you the trade rumors are wrong. I know that for sure. Is that I think there are situations where a team calls another team and they say, oh, what about Ricky Rubio? And whatever the conversation goes from there, if that gets out of, hey, they were talking about Ricky Rubio, then it comes back to the Timberwolves may trade him, and that's just not, this is not the reality of what's going on. They're very happy with him as the point guard, at least as of right now. When he's been healthy, he's been a decent three-point shooter. I mean, his rookie year, I think he shot 34% from three, and it's not a lot of attempts, and he ended up getting hurt. But up until that point, he was, you know, a little below league average. His 2013-14 season, he shot 33% from three, which is not great, but it's still not a disaster. So when he's healthy and he's able to play, the jumper's okay, or it's at least good enough. The problem is, like you said, he can't finish around the basket. And so that's where the threat is. No one really cares if he can't shoot coming off that pick and roll, if he can't get to the basket and finish a layup. And that's where you really suck the defense in and they get to kick the ball around and make them pay from the perimeter with cutters or whatever. And so it was especially bad last year. I think he was like 33% around the rim. And that's because he was playing on one ankle. But it's not like he was going to be much better than that in the first place. He was, I mean, his career like 47, 50% around the rim, which is just really bad. You want to be up around 60%. So if he can get that, I don't even know if it's a strength thing or if it's a comfort thing with him or if it's all mental. But there's something keeping him from being able to really finish around the rim. And so he can still be, you know, maybe a top 15 point guard in the NBA if he's healthy and all goes right outside of that. But if he can't learn how to finish, then maybe it is a guy that eventually they just have to move on from.
Well, and so then that's my other question. Do you think there will be that the Minnesota Timberwolves will be involved in a trade, maybe not around Rubio, but maybe around some of their other players just to create more playing time for their younger guys?
It's possible. I mean, I still think that they want to create competition for minutes, but eventually you have to get rid of the logjam and guys have to step forward. And you know, maybe if Tyus Jones comes in and looks like he's gonna just, you know, blow the door off the hinges as a point guard because he's a really good scorer in the pick and roll. If he comes in and looks like he can play right away, then maybe you start looking next summer into moving Rubio and freeing up some time from him to get Tyus Jones more reps in there and let him learn from guys like Andre Miller. But I think for now, I think they're kind of set as they are, and they just want to see if the young talent they have can move forward and build on what they have, and you kind of start weeding players out from the future based on that.
So moving off the Timberwolves for a sec, I got to ask this question. It's the 15-year anniversary of Vince Carter's iconic dunk over Frederick Weiss at the 2000 Olympics in Sydney. And I was just watching the video of it yesterday, and there was a big piece on ESPN, the oral history of it, and it was just great stuff. And I think it's number one in terms of dunks all time in my book. Where does it rank for you?
Yeah, this is the greatest dunk I've ever seen. and I don't even know if you want to just, like, I know we've seen guys jump over other people in dunk contest stuff, but to do it in a game, and his description, the ESPN piece is great, and his description of what was going on and other people's descriptions throughout that oral history is just phenomenal. But it is something where, like, it was just a perfect storm. Like, if Gary Payton doesn't miss that layup, if whoever the Frenchman is who throws a horrible outlet behind the back pass doesn't throw that pass that way, it just lined up perfectly, and it was caught the ball, two dribbles, and just took off. And my favorite description of what happened on that play was him saying, like, I had to really lean forward. Like, I was too far out. I didn't think I could get there. I was just trying to stretch as much as I could. I think we, you know, for years we look at that and we're like, man, he just decided to jump over a guy. And you really find out it was just kind of maybe by accident where he was just jumping. And he ended up clearing Frederick Weiss, and he ended up having to stretch for it. And then he almost knocks Kevin Garnett out. Kevin Garnett goes to celebrate with him, and he swings wildly. And I can't repeat the words, you know, on podcast or air, but for people who remember the NBC broadcast later on, they caught a timeout shortly after, and the words Kevin Garnett was just describing the play with in the huddle were not FCC worthy by any means. But it was just it's the best dunk moment in the history of the game, and I can't imagine what it would take for someone else. I mean, I think you would have to have someone like windmill over a person in the middle of a lane, like not even on a fast break, but just like coming down the lane on a pick and roll and doing that, or going between the legs or something like that. I mean, it would take something really incredible to literally jump over a guy clearing a 7-2 Frenchman.
So, Zach, we haven't really had a chance yet, but I guess I'll preface this by saying I'm a bit of a podcast junkie, and that Ion Basketball is hands down my favorite podcast. And I guess I'm just, what got you into podcasting? Like, when did that start? Before doing Ion Basketball, had you been podcasting before, or?
Yeah, so when I started out writing, I had a website, tacoos.net, that's been long dead, but it was just me, you know, thinking I knew what I was writing about, and turns out I had no idea what I was writing about. I had to really learn what I was doing. But it was just me and two friends from high school that I'm still friends with now. I was like, hey, I have this website. We should do a podcast for it. And we would just joke around. And thankfully, those podcasts aren't around because they would be probably incriminating at this point.
Yeah, and one of
it was just getting the reps in and learning that I could stand the sound of my own voice, and maybe other people could too. And I don't know, there are some podcasts that are very structured, and it works for them. Like, for me, it's it's more of a free-flowing conversation, like maybe Bill Simmons or the starters when they do the blank jump, you know, the drop podcast, and you know, maybe Zach Lowe's podcast is, it's a little more free-form and just kind of tangential, and that's I don't know, that's what I have fun doing, and other people at least seem to enjoy it. There are some people that really hate it, but I don't know, as long as they're downloading, I guess that's okay.
Exactly. I'm there with you. I've been getting ripped on by these two because I said I'd rather have Kendrick Perkins than Paul Gasol in our very first episode.
Oh,
so.
God.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, it's thankfully that episode was a pilot episode, if you will. So it's not available. Nobody can actually find that anywhere, which is nice. But as far as podcasting goes, what's been the most rewarding experience about the whole thing for you?
I think that a weird thing has been a couple of times at Las Vegas Summer League, like someone has come up to me and they're like, hey, I really love the podcast. Thanks for doing that. I think I don't know. I mean, we're all just killing time on the internet. Some of us get to, you know, get to do it for a living. Some of us just do it to get through the day. But that's really all it is. It's like we're just killing time and trying to find something we enjoy. And I think that the people that, for some reason, like, want to thank you for doing a podcast. That it's a weird feeling, but it's like that's the most rewarding part. It's just that knowing someone else is willing to kill the time during the day listening to you babble on about, you know, Nick Cage and then maybe Rajon Rondo.
All right. So again, you're listening to the Driving Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. We want to thank our special guest, Zach Harper. He's at Talk Hoops on Twitter. Again, the Eye on Basketball podcast. Make sure you check that out. Also, his work at CBS Sports and AWolfAmongWolves.com. Zach, thank you so much for your time, man. We really appreciate the insight.
Anytime. I'd love to do it again.
So thank you, everybody, for listening to this special midweek edition of the Drivin' Dish NBA podcast. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Please leave us a review on iTunes. Again, it's not for our ego. It actually helps us move up the ranks. So leave that review on iTunes, and we'll read it on the show.
And if you happen to have an Android phone and you listen to podcasts on Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn, Player FM, whatever it might be, leave us a review there and then tweet us and let us know that you left it, and we will make sure to mention it on the show. Also, there is still time to get involved in our fantasy basketball draft. All you have to do is like the Facebook page, just search Drive and Dish Podcast. In the very top post, just leave your email right there. We're calling for people to join up with us. And so if you want to get involved in the Drive and Dish Fantasy Basketball League, just like our Facebook page.
And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at Drive and Dish NBA. You can follow me personally at Justin C on the air. You can follow Kevin at Refuse to Lose. And you can follow Tim at Radio Tim NBA.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole.
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da.
Hey, let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.